Have you ever heard someone say the following thing or said it yourself? I have to negotiate my job offer with, and then insert whatever company name is appropriate here. Really, any company name. If you have, I need to tell you, there's something wrong with that seemingly simple statement, a misunderstanding at a very basic level. But many of the people I've come across in my work as an executive and career coach and an executive recruiter don't realize it at first. And recognizing that basic misunderstanding and then course correcting can help them and you achieve a better result in your next salary negotiation. Stay tuned, and I'll share what I learned as an executive recruiter and a hiring manager at a Fortune 100 company. I'm Doug Lester, an executive coach and career strategist to MBAs and ambitious professionals. I've worked one-on-one with well over 1,000 people, helping them craft compelling work-life narratives and advance satisfying, meaningful careers. When it comes to your career and your life, if you don't craft your own narrative, then someone else might do it for you, and you might not like what they come up with. So let's work together on your narrative now. Corporations are people, my friend. I'm probably dating myself, but if you were following the US presidential race back in 2011, you may remember Mitt Romney saying, and then getting into a lot of trouble for that. Obscure political references aside, there's something to be said for remembering that corporations, or companies, are managed and staffed by actual people. Too often, I sense that the people I coach tend to forget that when they're negotiating a job offer. The HR professional or hiring manager they've spent weeks or even months getting to know suddenly ceases to be a person in their eyes. Instead, that HR rep or hiring manager suddenly transforms into the living embodiment of their company, whose one goal is to maximize company profit by minimizing the salary of the person I'm working with. Now that the HR rep or hiring manager or executive recruiter, like I was at one time, is no longer a person but a company, the mistaken assumption is that they're incapable of being put off or offended. With that image in mind, the person I coach, or you, might be inclined to take an especially hard or aggressive negotiating stance. Don't get me wrong, you need to be your own advocate. But a sudden change in your attitude and manner can quickly derail what might have been an amicable, productive, and advantageous conversation between two or more people, all hoping for a positive outcome. And you may also end up undermining the positive narrative about yourself you've carefully crafted and communicated. So how do you walk this treacherous tightrope of, on the one hand, being an advocate for yourself, and on the other, remembering that you're dealing with people who, in the end, just want to be treated like people and not a company? It all starts with a little empathy and understanding. The person you're negotiating with may be guided or constrained by the objectives and guidelines of their company. But in the end, like I said, they're still people. They have lives, they breathe, and they have emotions. And they can get frustrated at the end of what's probably been a long recruiting process when, suddenly, the person they've come to respect and maybe even like starts treating them as if they were an obstacle, or worse, an enemy to be conquered. As a former executive recruiter, I remember times when candidates that I had come to know, like, and respect in the recruiting process transformed into almost entirely different people when it came time to negotiate their offers. At best, it was disorienting. At worst, it was demotivating, or even troubling, causing me to question my own judgment. I recognize that some industries and companies have especially aggressive cultures, and if you're in or trying to get in one of those industries or companies, then taking on just a bit of an edge in a salary negotiation, it might be appropriate. In those situations, the person or people you're negotiating with are steeped in that aggressive culture and might even question your suitability for the industry or the job if you don't negotiate just a little hard. In most situations, though, it's possible to advocate for yourself effectively and keep your sharpest knives in the kitchen drawer where they belong, preserving the positive narrative you've crafted about yourself as a potential colleague. Use your best judgment, of course. So let's get back to the idea of empathy and understanding and give a little thought to the sacrifice the people you're negotiating with may have to make on your behalf. When you're negotiating compensation for a job, you're often asking someone, whether it's the hiring manager, an HR professional, or an executive recruiter, to spend some of the political capital they've stored up in their company or with their client on you. Here's what might be happening behind the scenes. Your contact, let's call him Scott, that's my middle name, by the way, has already spent many, and sometimes thankless, hours planning, organizing, and managing the recruiting process that you've been a part of. Scott likely expressed support for your candidacy several times, and he may have even done that in the face of differing opinions and resistance at specific points in the process. In doing that, Scott probably expended a little of his political capital in his company or with his client on your behalf. Now, once you've become the finalist for whatever role it is that we're talking about, Scott then pulls together a compensation package and an official offer specifically for you. Having been in Scott's position myself and having worked closely with many people serving in Scott's role, I'm pretty confident that at this point, Scott is highly invested in closing the deal with you. He wants to make you an offer that you'll be inclined to accept, or at a minimum, that you won't be so insulted by that you just walk away. So Scott may, once again, advocate on your behalf as your compensation package is being assembled and approved. And in doing so, he gives up even more of his political capital for you. And once you have your offer in hand and want to negotiate, you'll potentially be asking Scott to stick his neck out yet again and give up just a little more, or maybe even a lot, of his political capital on your behalf. In doing so, his reputation and judgment will be on the line. He'd better think you're worth it. I'm not saying this is happening behind the scenes for every job offer, but in my experience as a hiring manager and an executive recruiter, it's pretty typical, especially when a mid-level or senior-level role is being filled. At more junior levels, compensation tends to be more uniform, but there still can be some advocacy going on behind the scenes. The numbers are just smaller and the stakes less consequential. So how do you help ensure that Scott remains confident that you're worth the investment of his personal political capital? I think we've established at this point that you need Scott's help and support. So it would probably be good if Scott still likes you. It's as simple as that. Like most people, he wants to feel good about his work and the people who benefit from it. In this case, that's you. He's a living and feeling person after all, and not a company. So how are you going to make sure that he does feel good about it? Being a strong candidate, with all the skills and experience required to meet or exceed the expectations of the role, helps a lot. But there's something else you can and should do. It's easy. Just show a little appreciation for the sacrifice of political capital that Scott has and may still be making on your behalf. He is the key to your positive outcome, and he needs to feel that the sacrifice is worth it. Consider starting your negotiation with something like this. Thanks very much, Scott, for the time it took to pull this offer together. I know it can be a lot of work. That's not complicated, and it doesn't indicate any weakness. In fact, expressing gratitude can be a sign of strength and confidence. Then focus on your clarifying questions related to the offer, requests you may have, or your reasonably presented counteroffer. We can talk about that in another podcast episode. And end with, thanks again for the work you've put into this, Scott. I really appreciate it. It only takes a few well-timed statements of appreciation, ideally before and after your compensation-related questions and requests, to help Scott feel good about the sacrifice of political capital he's probably going to make on your behalf. Everyone loves to be loved. And if you show just a little appreciation, you might get a little love back, and maybe some extra cash and benefits too. So don't let the fact that you're being hired by a company, however big or small it might be, blind you to the fact that if you have a job offer and there's going to be a negotiation, you're actually negotiating with a person or small group of people and not a company. And if you're negotiating with people, then you should probably treat them like, well, people. After all, if you want to improve the compensation related to your job offer, then the people you're working with are probably going to have to expend just a little of their political capital in their company or with their client to get it for you. If you keep that in mind and are intentional about showing your appreciation for the role that people involved in the recruiting process play, things will likely go more smoothly for you, and your carefully crafted narrative about yourself as a great potential colleague will remain intact. So express your gratitude out loud. Do it whenever it seems appropriate. It doesn't mean that you're a pushover. It just means that you recognize that you're dealing with people.